Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. In this episode, we continue the interview with the great Jim King, former NBA All-Star, former Bull, and he continues to share with us some really interesting stories about Dick Mata, Dick Mata's offense. But most importantly, in this episode, he shares with us a story about Jerry Sloan. And when you go to the United Center and you see that number 4 up in the rafters, I think this really, the story he relates to us really illustrates why it's up there, why Jerry's so respected by his teammates and opponents when he played back in the day, and why he's so beloved by the older fans and the older generation of Bulls fans out there. You know, I only remember Jerry Sloan as coach of the Utah Jazz, so hearing this story really shed some light on why, you know, that banner is hanging up in the rafters at the UC. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. My apologies on the delay in getting this put up. Unfortunately, my family's had some health issues, and it's delayed this cut. But good news is that this episode's up, and then we have one more interview. Tim Gallagher, NBA basketball historian, was able to conduct an additional interview with Jim, and he gets into some other additional topics that are really great listen. Should hopefully have that up this week. So enjoy. Any questions, email me at chicagobullseye@gmail.com, chicagobullseye@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, chicagobullseyefred, at CBEFred. God bless. Talk to you soon. Hope you have a great week.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about your time with the Bulls, 70-73, with Dick Mata. Maybe a little bit of information about him as a coach, you know, what made him different from the other coaches that you had. And, you know, that team, that Bulls team, that is really the first beloved team in Chicago, what made that team so special, in your opinion?
You know, I had to give Dick a lot of credit for that. He had his system when he came in there. He had never had a team, a running team, and didn't know how to run. And when I came in there, you know, I'd been on running teams, and I'd get the ball and head out down the floor, and I'd get down there, and I'd be there by myself, and here comes Butterbean Love and Chet Walker just kind of taking their time, you know, Big Tom, Borwinkle, and you think, hey, you can get some quick shots down here. I kept telling him, hey, if we could just run a little bit, you know, we could get some cheap shots. We'll get some cheap goals down there. And he said, I don't know how to do that. I never coached a running team. I just don't understand how you do that. And I said, well, you have to create a habit of doing it, because you can't do it part of the time. You got to do it all the time in order to take advantage of it and get everybody on the same page. But he would never do that. But he had this system, and, you know, we'd be playing, you know, we'd be on the road, let's say, and we'd lose a couple on the road, and then guys would start grumbling and say, well, you know, everybody knows our plays better than we do, you know, and we had so many different plays. We had, you know, like 10 set plays most of them were triggered by where you pat the guard, passed the ball, and where he cut. So if you passed and went behind him, that was the get. So you get it back. And then the high post comes up, and the forward hands it back to the guard, and then he goes over the top for a possible lobs, about 5 different options off of it. So each one of those plays was enough to be an offense. But there's so many plays. I remember Bob Weiss, we were playing one night against Seattle, and Lenny Wilkins was playing and coaching both, and so he got a brain fart. You know, he couldn't. I called the play, and he was the other guard, so he was trying to figure out, you know, he forgot what it was. And so he says, what's a 30? And Lenny Wilkins is covering. He said, that's when you cut through here. He's telling him the offense. You know, so people knew it. But here was the thing about Mata. And guys were grappling, saying, you know, we need to run more. We need to change the offense. Everybody knows it, you know. So then I'd get with Dick, because he made me his assistant my second year there, and his third year, my third year there. I was his assistant, playing assistant. And I said, you know, everybody's grumbling about the offense. They're, you know, he said, I know we need to practice, because we've been on the road. And we hadn't had practice in 6 days or 7 days. And so he said, we're all right. We just need to get in the gym. So what we'd do is go in the gym the next day, and we'd run through all the options, which we'd put, you know, two teams out there, one on each end. And without the defense, you didn't use any defense, just go through the options every play. And then we'd bring the defense, other team, you know, the second team down to cover the first team. and run through it again with the defense. And then would go out the next night and just whack somebody. You know, because you get away, and they would play Milwaukee, for instance, you know. And we'd just whack them. And because of the execution, you forget about, you know, the execution gets sloppy. And the longer you play without practice, without practicing it, you get away from it. You start, you know, taking the shortcuts and that kind of stuff. Well, you just get back onto your execution and you go right back out there and all of a sudden it works. But, you know, Jerry Sloan was a great example for everybody. I mean, he played so hard in practice. He'd knock your block off. You know, he worked. I saw him came into practice. Came into training camp. We had training camp there at Wheaton College, and we went in there and first walked out on the court and I'm shooting some free throws, just standing there shooting. And he's on the lane and he's jumping in as I shoot it, and I'm thinking, I watched him do it two or three times. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Didn't you hear them change that rule?" He said, "They don't have to wait till it hits the rim. As soon as it leaves his hand, you can get in there." He said, "I'll steal some rebounds," and sure enough, he did. You know, first half of the season, he was getting rebounds from free throws because other guys were still standing there. You know,
wow.
He knew the rule, but that's Jerry Sloan. He didn't have great talent, but great skills necessarily. He just worked the butt off every day, and he was always trying to find a way to beat somebody. And when we played Pete Maravich, you know, that was like my last year, I think, was when he came in the league. And the press made a big deal out of, you know, the best defensive player in the league is going to play against the best offensive player in the league, and Pete Maravich. Maravich didn't get double figures all year. He never got double figures against us because he met him. I mean, he would have gone to the airport to pick him up. You know, I got to the gym that night, and he was already dressed and sitting in his locker. He never did that. But he was ready and waiting. I mean, he wanted to see him on the court. But what he would do is he studied him enough to know that, you know, you come down with the ball and you make a pass to your right and you're going to cut to your left. That's an automatic thing. Everybody does that. Instead, Jerry's standing right there to his left, and when he goes left, he hits Jerry right in the face. I mean, he lands, you know, right in the middle of him, and Jerry just grabs a hold of him and pulls him down on top of him. And he gets three charges the first half. So that messes his mind up a little bit. You know, so he never got double figures. You had him in foul trouble every game. So,
wow.
You know, that's the kind of player he was. And I'll have to say, you know, with him, I don't think there was anybody any more dedicated than Jerry was. And I'll tell you this one story, and I'll give you a break. This was the kind of guy he was. We'd been on the West Coast. And it was in February, late in the season. Everybody was playing injured and hurt and, you know, and that kind of thing, and really exhausted. And we couldn't land in Chicago. It was fogged in. So we tried Milwaukee. It was fogged in. So it was the middle of the week. It was like on a Wednesday. And we played the next night, Thursday night, we had Detroit. And we're the three of us, Milwaukee, Detroit, and Chicago, were all fighting for the first two spots to get in the playoffs. And it's right down towards the end of the season. So, you know, it's really important games. And so we finally land in Cleveland. And they said, okay, Mata says, you guys want to – we can get a bus and go. We'll just have to drive slow because the fog's on the highways too. So we can take a bus or we can wait till tomorrow, get a night's rest here in the motel, and then fly back in tomorrow lifts up. The fog lifts tomorrow morning sometime. We can fly in. And everybody said, no, let's go home. We've been out there for like a week, you know, so let's get the bus and go home. Well, we get this bus, and it's one of those like out of the 50s, you know, so little small rounded ones, you know, and the seats were uncomfortable and short. Nobody could sit, and nobody could sleep, for sure. We drove all night, and we got left there about 9 at night. We got in the next morning about 7 at the airport where our cars were, and we all of us got home probably at 8 or 8:30. That morning, and we've got Detroit already there rested and waiting on us, you know, to play at home. And so we go to the game, and And it's one of those games where it's like an overtime, and Sloan's got 20 rebounds and 21 points. And, you know, we win the game by 1 point. And I couldn't believe it. You know, it was just incredible. What an effort. I mean, everybody was tired, but just to see him play that hard after this week we've been in through and that night. So now after the game, we get on the plane and fly to Detroit. Because now we lose an hour by going over to Detroit. And we play the next night in Detroit. And we need to beat them, too, because it'll give us a full game advantage. And so we're going and we play the same kind of game, and he does the same thing, same kind of play, and we win the game again. Now, we're coming home after the game, and we're on the plane, and Jerry's sitting next to me, and he said I was kind of considered the reverend, they called me, and he said, "Jimmy, I want to ask you a question." And I said, "Okay," because the next night we got Milwaukee at our place, and they're number one. They're number one in our league, so you know this is a really tough stretch. And so anyway, he says, "Jimmy, I'm going to ask you a question." I said, "Sure." And he said, "You know, my brother and I, he had more than one, but he said, my brother called me today, and his wife passed away. She had cancer, and she passed away, but said, we broke up about 5 years ago and hadn't even really talked, and he asked me if I'd come to the funeral tomorrow, and what do you think I ought to do?" He said, "I think I know what you're going to say." And I said, "Well, yeah, you know what I'm going to say. You need to be there." He said, "Well, I already made my reservations. I got to fly to St. Louis and rent a car and drive over there in southern Illinois." And I said, "That's the right thing to do." So anyway, we get home, and I'm walking out to my car, and Mata says, "Hey, Jimmy, you better be ready to play because Jerry's not going to be here tomorrow." I said, "Yeah, I just talked to him a little bit ago." And so none of us expect him, you know, to be back. So when I get to the game, I'm going a little early, and before nobody else has gotten there yet, and I'm kind of packing, getting my coat off and hanging stuff up and getting my uniform ready. And I hear this noise, and I look over, and Sloan is already dressed in his uniform and his warm-ups, and he's asleep in his locker. These lockers are about 3 feet wide, and he's in there crossways asleep. Looks like a ghost. He's so white, you know. And so he finally kind of rustles up, and I said, "Hey, man, what are you doing here? I didn't expect to see you." He said, "Oh, those other two games don't mean anything unless we win this one." And I said, "Well, I know that, but how'd it go?" And then we talked a little bit. So then he goes out that night and does the same kind of game. And afterwards, I'll never forget this, he runs to the locker room. Now, he always jumped in the shower before the press got in there because he didn't want to talk to the press. And he'd stay in there until they got tired of waiting because they were time, you know, the time they had to get it a certain amount of time. But he'd just stay in the shower. This time he came in, and Chet Walker was right behind him, and I was the third one in. And he went down, and Chet walked past him to get to his, but he stopped and came back and stuck his hand out. And he said, "Man, you're the most dedicated athlete I've ever met," and just went on. But, you know, to get that kind of accolade from your teammates, I mean, that's kind of the ultimate. That you're the best.
What a story. So he flew all the way down to southern Illinois, met with his
St.
brother.
Louis, and then rented a car. It was about an hour and a half over to his home. And then he went to the funeral. Then he came back to St. Louis, drove back, and then he flew back up to St. Then instead of going home, he just came straight to the stadium.
Unbelievable.
Back for the game.
Same day. So he had a funeral in the morning, and then same day, that night, he flies in.
We got home from Detroit about 1 o'clock, you know, 1 or 2. So he caught a 6:30 flight the next morning. So he didn't go to sleep that night probably much, if he went at all. But he had to get to the airport to catch a flight at 6:30. Because he was going to get down there about 7:30 and then get his car and then, you know, drive an hour and a half and get on, you know.
That's so great to hear these. Yeah, great to hear the behind-the-scenes stories. And, you know, and the fans that were probably at the game that night, they're thinking, boy, Jerry had another great game. They had no idea what physical ordeal he'd been through, where he'd been, and
No.
Well, you know, those Bulls teams you had, I mean, you know, the 3 years you were there, 51 wins, 57 wins, 51 wins. I mean, you guys had some great teams during those years, but just looked like the Lakers were always in your way in the playoffs.
They were. Yeah.
There's your old teammate Jerry West and Wilt and
yeah,
you know, very.
Yep. Jim, I can't believe how generous you've been with your time, first of all. Thank you so much. I mean, and this is gold for the listeners. Can we get you on again in the next few weeks? Is that possible? I had the pleasure of interviewing again. And, I mean, I can't thank you enough for the time you've given us. Is there anything that you wanted to mention or any websites or anything that you're involved with now that you'd like the audience to listen about to check out?
Not really. I know how to get to listen to them now because you showed me how to do that. But I had my camps going in Oklahoma, and I used to get several kids in Chicago that would come down there. And I didn't keep the records from all that. I should have. It would have been great for reunions and stuff. But about 4 or 5 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I got a call from one of them. There was two little kids that came down there, and they had Bulls, everything Bulls on. You know, they'd come to camp, you know, not great players, but great campers, you know. And well, they'd stay for 2 or 3 weeks, and and it was hard, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, I hadn't heard from those kids, and it was almost like, I mean, now they're in their 50s, and these guys were like 12 and 13, you know, or 10 and 12, and they were just such, you know, so enthusiastic about the Bulls, and still are. They have season tickets, and so they call me and just to let me know that how much it meant to them to come to my camps and to what they learned and how they raised their kids because of it, and you know, just so much good stuff, and it just made everything worth it. And so I just like to say, well, they listen to it. If they don't, I'm going to tell them to, but yeah, to listen to it, and maybe they'll get a chance to hear the stories too.
Oh, fantastic.
Right. Well, and Jim, you're still working with young players too. Now you live in the Dallas area now, and you're still working with young players. And I obviously
right,
you have
right.
family there.
I have my two daughters here, and my son still lives up in Tulsa area, and he's got a super player on his hands there that someday I think will be a good one. But anyway, two daughters down here have all three of my kids have three kids each, so we have 9 grandkids, and six of them are down here. So we've enjoyed it, you know, just being down here around them and growing up with them. And I've got one that's 17 that just my sidekick all the time. We go to all the games and like Tim does. And it's been a really fun thing to be around. And I miss Tulsa. My wife and I miss Tulsa and all of our friends up there. But we can get up there pretty soon, you know, every once in a while and see them. And it's just been a great thing, you know, just to be close to our grandkids. And that's what we're all about.
Jim, it's been an honor to have you on. I can't thank you enough for the generous amount of your time. Looking forward to having you on again in the next few weeks. And just a complete pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
All right. My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Hello to Chicago. You.